Welcome to the fourth episode of the Indigenous Hour. We are now back after an extended summer vacation with new themes and exciting guests. And today we are podcasting from Nuuk, the capital of Greenland. This and also the following podcast has been made possible thanks to an ongoing cooperation project between Indigenous peoples of Nordic countries and Northwest Russia. This project is implemented by Young Karelia NGO from Russia and is funded by the Nordic Council of Ministers. And our hosts here in Greenland is the Inuit Circumpolar Council in Greenland, ICC. In addition to many ways in which Greenland is important for the global Indigenous peoples movement, indeed the future of our planet as a whole, it has also special importance for this podcast. So far, we have had listeners from approximately 40 countries, and among those, Greenland is our seventh largest audience, which is, I think, quite a pleasant finding. And this is our first in a series of two podcasts to be recorded here in Greenland, but it is not strictly about Greenland. The idea is to discuss topics that are relevant to Indigenous peoples worldwide. Our central topic today will be the right to self-determination. This right, of course, is a cornerstone of Indigenous peoples' human rights. It is articulated in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, especially in Article 3, which says Indigenous peoples have the right to self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. And one could say that most of the following, or the more specific rights in the UN Declaration directly derive from this this particular right to self-determination. So, however, this term, self-determination, is also one that is often misunderstood or perhaps understood differently by different people. Its meaning has also certainly changed or evolved over time. And over the past century, perhaps continues to evolve. In the context of Indigenous peoples, I believe that one of the best, if not the best example of how Indigenous peoples actually can exercise the right to self-determination is Greenland. So you don't even have to take my word for this, but it also appears to be the view of the UN system. Recently, or let's say a few years ago, a handbook called Implementing the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was co-published by the Inter-Parliamentary Union and the UN system, and it is also freely downloadable online. This publication uses Greenland as the case study to illustrate the exercise of the right to self-determination in practice. And our today's guest, I believe, is one of the best experts or practitioners on this very important topic. So I'm joined today by Mr. Kuupik Kleist, who is one of the best-known Greenlandic politicians. He's currently serving as member of Greenlandic Parliament and has held many public offices, most prominently perhaps as Prime Minister of Greenland between 2009 and 2013. As the fifth Prime Minister of Greenland, he oversaw the four-year period immediately after Greenland's Self-Rule Act, which has been a major milestone in the history of Greenlander self-determination. Indeed, I cannot think of a better guest to start off our Greenland Week, so welcome to the Indigenous Hour.
Thank you.
Really, thank you for your time, and indeed your biography is very impressive. Is there something you would like to highlight that I didn't mention from your own personal background or your career?
Might only be one thing, which is actually a correction. I'm not longer with the parliament either. But aside from that, I think it goes without saying that one single person cannot do anything on his own. You need a cooperation, good friends, and also some stamina to actually what you said, to flesh out self-determination in practice. Also, I've been working actually with two different commissions on self-rule, Greenland self-rule. The first commission was a purely Greenlandic one, kind of setting the frames for what Greenland would be or would like to achieve on a later stage when there was a new commission established on self-rule. And this time it was by the Greenland Parliament and the Danish Parliament, equal numbers of members. So I served with both those commissions. The first one as a part of the secretariat for the commission, and the second one I was a member of the commission. And at that time I was serving both in the Greenland Parliament and the Danish Parliament at the same time. So that's one peculiar thing, that you can serve at two countries' parliaments at the same time.
I think we'll come back to the Greenland specifics, but right now I would like to kind of elevate ourselves above the, you know, the huge island of Greenland, and maybe just have a bit of a theoretical discussion about what actually is the right to self-determination. As you must be aware, there are many states that are afraid of this term. They as if some kind of a red cloth, for a bull. Yet this seems to be also, you know, essential part of the international human rights framework. The covenants of civic and political rights and so on. Yeah. So, what do you personally understand by the right to self-determination?
It is the right to have a say on your own life, basically. Now, talking about indigenous peoples and rights, indigenous peoples' rights are known for being collective rights rather than individual human rights. And in the light of indigenous peoples' rights, I think it's fair to talk about not individuals, but the groups of people. Peoples, as the term that we are using, which is not accepted by everyone, by the way. I'd rather say people than peoples. I think my own experiences and the way that we have been dealing with self-determination has been very, in a very practical manner. I mean, and it doesn't embrace everything at once. For me, it's a gradually increasing say and competence to determine your own future. For a lot of indigenous peoples around the world, I think within the framework of self-determination, the most important element of that seems to be, to me, the right to self-identification in the first place. Because even though it might sound very innocent, you have the right to identify yourself. For some states, self-identification also have been seen as a very dangerous avenue. But with my understanding of self-determination and self-identification, the basis for seeing yourself as a distinct group comes from your right to identify yourself. Without the exercise of self-identification, it can become very blur what you're talking about. So we always, from ICC, and also when I was with the government and taking part in debates within the UN, we always had laid a lot of meaning with the word self-identification as a basis for exercising other rights according to indigenous people's rights.
Okay, I think that's a very helpful point to link those two very important concepts. In your view, have Greenlanders, the indigenous people of Greenland, have they by now exercised their right to self-determination, or is it not fully happening yet?
It's not fully happening yet. From a very practical point of view, we haven't fulfilled the agreement on self-rule yet with the Danish government and parliament. There is a list actually on issues to be or powers to be transferred from Danish government to Greenland, which is a long list of 30-40 elements to be taken over by Greenland. So, as I said, self-determination is gradually growing stronger. You have a bigger and bigger say on your own life and your future as a people. So this process so far have taken approximately 40 years for Greenland to reach the state that where we are in. But whilst some crucial issues is still resting with the Danish government, for instance, the questions related to foreign affairs, even though we are practicing foreign affairs policies from Greenland. But formally, it rests with the Queen, who then disseminate the power to the government. And then it's security, defense policy, as I would mention as the two most significant and important areas where we do not have, still we do not have the right to exercise our own foreign affairs policy or defense policy, which for Greenland specifically have played a very, very significant role for the country and the presence by the U.S. military forces have had a huge impact on Greenland.
Do you think that full self-determination by an indigenous people, such as Greenlanders, but also others, can ever be achieved? Or is it a matter of degrees, that there is less and more, but that you never really 100% reach that?
Yeah, that, at least that's my point of view, mm-hmm. that self-determination is a kind of what do you call it, elastic piece which can be extended or cut down, as we have seen it in several examples around the world. So full self-determination, if it is translated by a complete and 100% control on everything, that will never be achieved by anyone. Mm-hmm. So it's a degree of self-determination, and you're always facing the need for compromises more and more with the globalization and our mutual dependency on each other. But self-determination is basically the right to decide upon your future.
Yeah, so another, in my view, interesting aspect about the notion of self-determination is how much the meaning of it has changed over time. So, for example, in 1914, Vladimir Lenin, the Bolshevik leader, wrote that, I quote, "It would be wrong to interpret the right to self-determination as meaning anything but the right to existence as a separate state." And just 4 years later, in 1918, Woodrow Wilson, the U.S. president, representing an opposite camp to Bolsheviks, also said that, well, self-determination is not a mere phrase, it is an imperative principle of action. Yeah. But since then, 100 years later, this is not what is mostly meant by the right to self-determination. How much, in your view, is self-determination linked to statehood?
It's not necessarily linked one-to-one, as I see it. The way that our understanding of what a state is today is not that old, if you compare it to, I mean, thousands of years of history. So I would say today's form of state is relatively new. And now you quoted Woodrow Wilson and Vladimir Lenin. The missing word for me is for who? Self-determination for who? Because I know that when they said that, they meant the whole Russia, for instance, or the whole Northern America.
Or Eastern Europe, maybe.
But not
Africa, for example.
No. And not within the state either. I mean, what about the indigenous groups, which they have a very, very hard time accepting that you find the indigenous peoples at all within within the borders of those states? It's always been one of the big issues when different bodies within the UN discusses the issues related to indigenous people's right to self-determination in the first place, even have those states accept that they would have groups of indigenous peoples within the borders. So it's kind of before the line zero, so to speak. So you're right in saying that the phrase self-determination is understood very differently depending on who is talking about it and where you are talking about it, and also dependent on the situation you are in at the actual time you are talking about self-determination. So it's a flexible term.
Yeah,
but still forms the basis for the struggle that indigenous peoples have been fighting for many years now.
Yeah. So with that, we'll take a brief music break. We'll listen to some Greenlandic music, and when we come back, then we'll talk more about the path of Greenland to the current self-determination.
Thank you.
So welcome back to the Indigenous Hour. My guest today is Mr. Kuupik Kleist, former Prime Minister of Greenland. And now I would like to hear your views and your story about how Greenland got to this stage in 2009 when the Self-Rule Act of Greenland was adopted and Greenland received much greater powers of autonomy than before. Now, our listeners may be from all over the world, many of whom, of course, know Greenland, but maybe they really don't know the history. So how would you describe the main milestones that led to that 2009 Self-Rule Act?
First, I would say that currently we are 56,000 approximately inhabitants in Greenland. Over the years, Greenland went through a process of being colonized, and back in the 1940s and 50s, following the Second World War, there was this international awareness of the political status of different groups of people around the world. And the UN was established, and they had this process of looking at colonial powers and examining actually every colonial power on how they treat the colonies. So this process actually led to a change in the Danish constitution, which was adopted in 1953, with two purposes, that one, that a female could be the head of state in Denmark. Until then, it was only males. And the second part of it, of the amendment to the constitution, was to include Greenland as a part of the Danish kingdom. So by then, there was only the political institutions in Greenland were village councils and also a council for the country, two councils first and then one council to examine initiatives from the Danish government for Greenland. They didn't have a formal say, but they could express their views. And then later on, with Greenland is going to Denmark for education, and with the French Revolution back in the 60s, those young people were inspired, of course, but they could also see how the relations between Greenland and Denmark had to be renewed, and Greenlanders had to be empowered, and so on. So they formed kind of association, a students' association, in Copenhagen, and lots of them went back to Greenland without finalizing their studies to be a part of the new political movement, the freedom movement or independence movement.
And you were also part of that movement. You're speaking as if it's the they, but it's really we, right?
I'm a bit younger than that generation, so I was a follower, so to speak. But then the process led to the Home Rule Commission, initiated actually because at general elections once back in early 1970s, the coalition forming a new government in Copenhagen were lack of one vote. And they saw this Greenlandic vote, one of the Greenlandic votes, as an opportunity. But then they negotiated, and the result was establishment of this commission for Greenland Home Rule. So we exercised what you could call internal autonomy, gradually taking over more and more schooling system, the healthcare system, the social welfare system, and the control with the fisheries and stuff. What also was a driver behind the growing enthusiasm and the growing desire for more independence was when Denmark voted for membership of the European Union. Greenland did not have a separate vote. We were just a part of of the Danish kingdom inhabitants. So even though there was a majority voting against European Union membership in Greenland, the Danes, with a little margin, voted for. And then we were kind of dragged into the European Union. And we were members together with Denmark for 10 years, and then we succeeded in opting out of the European Union at that time as the only country in the world who done that. Now the Brits are our brothers in arms. But yeah, by the way, I think European Union would be good for the British as well, but not for Greenland, because we are not a part of Europe in that sense. And then I think the desire for a greater autonomy just stayed with people even after 1979, when the Home Rule was introduced. Actually, my party was formed on the background of the Home Rule, because Inuit Ataqatigiit, my party, was the only party recommending no vote for with regards to Home Rule. So it continued, and the degree of self-determination which came with the Home Rule was actually also stating for the first time that foreign affairs, defense policy, the mineral resources belong to the Danish state. So that was written in a document for the first time ever. So again, self-determination in the Greenlandic sense back in the 1970s came also with restrictions. And then in the new century, early 2000s, Greenland government and Danish government agreed then to establish a new commission again, after Greenland by itself had a commission, and the commission report recommended that negotiations should be taken with the Danish government on extending the Home Rule arrangement. So I was a part of that that commission, and after long, long negotiations, the agreement was accepted both in Greenland and in Denmark.
So what would you say is the essence of that self-rule act? And perhaps the next question would be, how has it actually, you know, empowered or benefited Greenlanders? But just in a nutshell, what is this self-rule act about?
It basically says that Greenland has the right to take over all competences and to be completely sovereign on all issues. And also it states that Greenland can opt out of the Danish kingdom by a popular vote, by general vote. That's the basic differences between the Home Rule and the self-rule. That it entails the right to secede from the state and form our own republic, kingdom, free association, or commonwealth, or whatever the opportunities and aspirations might be at that time.
And how did Denmark agree to this? Because I think there are so many states in the world that would never even entertain the possibility of this, of letting indigenous people in some part of their territory to have this right of secession. Like, I can think of some specific states, but I'm not going to mention them. But what led Denmark to in a way allowing this?
In that respect, it is a big advantage that Greenland is an island and 4,000 kilometers away from Copenhagen. That's one, I think, that's one matter of fact, which we don't think of really often. But secondly, the political climate, and also actually Denmark as a champion of human rights, being known as a state fighting for human rights and indigenous people's rights as well, they couldn't. I mean, it was a no-go for Danish politicians to deny the right to full self-determination for Greenlanders. And of course, we negotiated, and sometimes we are very good at negotiating and putting pressure on our counterparts. And at that time, when actually the commission's work was stalled because we couldn't reach any agreement on economy and mineral resources, we said, okay. So now we have to announce that Denmark denies its indigenous peoples their basic rights. And they couldn't live with that, of course. So we did put a lot of pressure on the Danish government and parliament. Seen historically, you were right in assessing that it's an extraordinary decision by the Danish politicians to accept that. But at the same time, I think, in one way, if you want to keep your close relations to either a person or a country, you need to set them free so that they would stay in some kind of relation out from a free will rather than being forced to it.
Yeah.
And I think that means a lot.
If only the world would work this way, but so at least we have one shining light here in terms of the free will with Greenland. But 8 years after the Self-Rule Act was adopted, what practical effect has this act had on Greenlanders' lives? I'm sure there has been something positive, but maybe there are also some, let's say, challenges, or maybe even some negative consequences. Could you just maybe highlight a few?
There are definitely both positive and negative sides to it. And on the positive side, of course, we know that we have the right in hand to do almost whatever we want to do. But the means, both politically and economically, have not yet fleshed out in actually taking over more areas of responsibility rather than the mineral resources. So we still have this list of 30 to 40 areas which should be taken over by Greenland itself to realize what's in the agreement and in the act. At the same time, the world have undergone a lot of very, very serious changes, including the global economic crisis. The climate changes have an impact on everything, especially the Arctic area. And things that we had hoped for and aspired to, we didn't really succeed in many of those areas. And we are still fighting huge basic challenges with respect to young people, education, abuse, and the kinds of problems that all indigenous peoples in the world knows of and facing in some degree.
And how would you describe the public opinion concerning this same issue, this autonomy? Would you say that Greenlanders, to your best knowledge, they are pleased with this greater autonomy? Are there maybe different points of view about that?
There is a very heated debate on that, actually, I think nowadays Greenland people are practically divided into two groups on that question. One group claiming that we need to work internally to get stronger in every sense before taking further steps politically towards independence. And the other group who cannot wait for anything and wants to declare the independent Greenland state tomorrow. So there is a heated debate, which I hope can lead to some kind of common understanding of our situation. We need to develop a lot. Infrastructure, our democratic institutions, our education system especially. Taking that only less than half of the Greenlanders above 15 years has any kind of formal education. Our dependency on sources from the outside is really heavy still. Experts, money, technology, everything. So claiming independency on that background for me wouldn't give very much sense, rather than then we lose the annual grant from the Danish state.
Yeah, to the extent that independent statehood is a next step in exercising the right to self-determination, it seems, also based on what you are saying, that there has to be a readiness to go, to take that extra step.
Yeah.
The readiness may not be there.
No.
So.
And to me, definitely, if you want a real independency, the demand has to grow irresistibly from the bottom, from the people, not from above telling you need to be independent. And it has to be a truly democratic process. Otherwise, we have seen many examples around the world on how declaring independence from the top have led to disasters in many countries.
So let's assume that there are some listeners of this conversation representing other indigenous peoples in the world, and they also somehow they want to be on the path towards greater self-determination, whatever it means in their context. What could be some words of advice that you could give to this hypothetical listener?
Yeah. First of all, self-identification. You need to know who you are. And it's a very important element for me. And then you have to sit together and discuss what do we want, what's our aspiration for the future. And you need basically to agree upon some goals and ambitions which are understandable for everyone. You need to address the issues in a way that the common sense be established amongst you, and then powers to achieve actually goes with unity on goals and aspirations. Without unity or without staying together, it's very, very hard to achieve anything. And then your counterpart would usually be the state governments, and you need to negotiate with them. I have been involved around the world with discussions on different levels on the issue of self-determination, and also I have visited the conflicted areas where people actually kill each other, fighting over land or water resources or whatever. In those situations, my advice have always been try to look at, even if it seems impossible, which kind of compromises you can participate in. You need to, the ultimate negative side of the fight for self-determination is, of course, killing each other, and nobody deserves that. So, to me, it's the long struggle is to find common grounds also with your counterpart or enemy, if you wish.
or the, you know, the state that you're living in, which may not be an enemy, but as you say, a counterpart.
Or a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even though, even if you're in love with each other, you need compromises.
Mm. Do you think that Greenland, as you know, perhaps one of the best practices in the way how indigenous people exercise the right to self-determination, could play maybe even a more prominent role in the world? For example, sharing these kinds of learnings, maybe being some kind of like a center of excellence or competence, and kind of helping, not just helping, but really supporting indigenous peoples worldwide.
I would claim that we do that already, also together with Denmark in most cases. And also our work in the UN system, we are always in support of those movements, freedom movements. But we are very restricted by lack of resources. We can't do everything we want, or we can only do a little part of what we really want to do. So you're right. We get invitations from many, many places who are in the process of trying to increase their degree of self-determination. And if we are able to do that and we can afford it, or we are getting funded by someone, we do that. But still, Greenlanders are 56,000 in total, including all the settlers from the outside. So it's a relatively little, small population. And we cannot travel all the time, all of us, even though it seems so. But I sincerely think that we have a role to play. For the time being, our work with the UN also is on trying to pave the way for non-sovereign governments or indigenous governments to be represented at the UN by themselves. I mean, the Greenland government has no formal room within the UN. It only, the official Greenland only can work with the UN within the Danish state delegation. But the ICC, Inuit Circumpolar Council, as an NGO representing all the Arctic indigenous Inuit, we have a say. So you could claim that ICC as an NGO has a higher status within the UN system than the Greenland government has.
So thank you very much, Mr. Kupik-Kleist, for joining the Indigenous Hour. It has been a fascinating conversation. Again, I think that we just had the privilege to listen to one of the best practitioners in the field of Indigenous people's right to self-determination. Thank you for listening. If you like this podcast, please share the link via social media. You can also join our Facebook page called Indigenous Hour for any new episode announcements and updates. And also you can subscribe to the Indigenous Hour on iTunes. So again, thank you, and until next time. Ooh.
milk stop.